This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Things are a little more stressful at your child's public school this week because of the STAR test. That's the state's required high-stakes standardized test. It's going to measure the quality of education being provided at that school, could decide that school's future, along with the future of the teacher, the student, and maybe the entire ISD. That's a lot of consequence to put on the shoulder of a child taking a test. What's going on with the STAR test? What questions or comments do you have about these standardized tests that we have in our public school system? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org, and you can tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon. We have Sharon Nichols with us in the studio, a professor of educational psychology at the College of Education and Human Development at the University of Texas, San Antonio. With us on the line, we have Heather Sheffield, a board member of the grassroots organizations Texans Advocating for Meaningful School Assessment, and also Molly Wiener, the director of policy for the nonprofit Texas Aspires. And again, the phone line is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980 to join our conversation about standardized testing in Texas schools. So Heather Sheffield, this week we have a lot of kids across the state of Texas taking the STAR test. What does that generally mean? What does that look like on the campus?
Hi, David. Thank you so much for having us. I'm representing Texans Advocating for Meaningful Student Assessment today. In terms of the kids and how that looks for children all over the state taking the STAR, what that means is that nerves are high, teachers are feeling the anxiety, and everyone is just really anxious this week.
And Molly Wiener with the nonprofit Texas Aspires, do you see that as well?
Hey, David. Yeah, thanks for having us as well. I think that this week is definitely an important week. I remember both as a student taking these standardized tests and as a high school math teacher who taught students taking this test, who administered them, that it's an important day. And I think that that the students know that and are working and trying their best. And so I think that students are focused and should be ready to go because they've had a year's worth of learning and they're ready to show us all kind of what they've learned.
So Sharon Nichols, professor of education psychology, you know, we're hearing that kids are nervous, maybe excited, but this is a lot to put on kids' shoulders to take a test.
Yeah, it sure is. And thanks for having me as well here. The fact that we've constructed schools as places where there's one or a few days that are the most important of the entire year is really problematic for students as it relates to their motivation, their attitudes towards learning. What does it mean to be good at something, not good at something, that we put so much focus on these tests and make them so important? Has some negative consequences for students and for teachers that I certainly in my research am concerned about for the education system.
So when we say if they're going to be good at something, not good at something, are you talking about like mindset, if they're going to have an open mindset or closed mindset in regards to their abilities and being able to put those abilities on a piece of paper?
Sure. Helping students to understand that learning is something that's ongoing and achievement is something that we don't get to, that we work towards and we consistently strive to be better. Having a day or a set of days where everything rests on that day and how you do on that day makes it more challenging for teachers and for students to keep in mind that learning is a process, not a product. So we sort of work against those interests and work against what we know about helping kids to attitudinally and psychologically look at learning as a process and something that continues over time.
On the phone lines, Burnett has called in. The number is 210-614-8980. Bernadette, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a parent, and I have chosen to... Our whole family, we decided we opt out. So I have a sixth grader this year who did not take the STAR. We kept him home for both days. And our second grader, they sort of have the students pretend to take it to prepare for third grade. And we said no. So every year we send a letter to the principal and to the school district outlining why we're not. We say it's in support of teachers. we say it's in support of students, and we get zero pushback. We're very lucky that we have a great principal, a great superintendent, and they believe in what we believe in, which is, I think it's borderline child abuse to make somebody to put that much pressure on a child. And we hear stories of kids who can't sleep the night before, they can't eat, they're crying, all of this for a standardized test, which the reality is a lot of, you know, students do go to college, and there are zero colleges in the United States of America who ask your STAR test score.
So your children, you told them, because they're aware that their class is going to be having test that day, and so you tell your child why they don't have to take the test.
We tell them that they're more than just the test. We say it only measures your ability to take the test, but there are other things that you are good at. And so we don't want you to be defined by this test. We don't want you to be stressed out. And then they share with us the horror stories that their friends are going through. And my sixth grader who's going into seventh grade, he really was like, maybe I should take the test, because they said if I don't pass this test in seventh grade, I can't take specials. I have to go into this other class where I have to, basically, I'm guessing they're going to spend the quarter or the semester preparing the students who didn't pass to pass. So to me, it's like the student is being penalized for their inability to take the test.
All right, Bernadette, thank you for that. Molly Weiner with the Texas Aspires. Can you talk about parents who decide to opt their children out like Bernadette did?
Yeah, and I want to thank Bernadette for kind of sharing her perspective. And I think kind of a couple of important things to remember when we're talking about this test is that this test is just a measure of the curriculum that the students have been going through and learning all year. It's a Texas test. It's designed by Texas teachers. It's given to Texas students. And it's one of many indicators. I think she said it well when she says, you know, my student is more than a test. And that's very true. And we use lots of indicators to see how students are doing and how schools are doing, but their academic achievement is one of those indicators. And we think that it's an important one to know at the end of the year, hey, did this student learn everything that he or she needed to learn this year? If not, where are those gaps? What can we do to help fill in those gaps before they move on to the next grade? And we think those things are important, and that the STAR test can be a valuable source of that information.
And Heather Sheffield, can you talk about that? Texas Advocating for Meaningful School Assessment, opting out. Is that common?
So it is pretty common, and I applaud Bernadette for doing what's best for her children. The only problem that we have that we're facing now is that our legislature has just passed House Bill 22, and basically these tests, while they are not diagnostic in nature and they are very punitive, these tests are being used to shame students, blame teachers and administrators, and deceive the public into thinking that our public schools are failing or doing poorly when really they are doing well. And our new accountability system is dependent on these test scores. And in middle school and elementary, the STAR test scores are the only thing that are going to be giving those schools a grade. And we don't think that that's acceptable. And exactly what Ms. Nichols was talking about before, with the test being
used. I tell you what, I got to interrupt you. Sorry to interrupt you. We'll get back to it in just a second. We've got to take this quick break and remind people that you're listening to The Source, and our phone number is 210-614-8980. We invite you to call in, talk about standardized testing in Texas schools. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about standardized testing in Texas public schools. These are high-stakes accountability tests that can decide whether or not a school will remain even open. We saw that P.F. Stewart Elementary here in San Antonio and SAISD. It failed to meet state accreditability standards for 5 years. 40% of the accreditability rating is going to come from the performance on these tests, like the STAR test, and that's why the SAISD had to switch. They made the decision to allow that school to become taken over by the Democracy Prep charter schools. And there are other campuses in SAISD, including Tafoya Middle School, which are looking at these results of this round of STAR test. If they don't improve, they could face a similar fate. So we're talking about the STAR test, the pressure that these students feel. What about the joy of learning? And is this really how the best way to educate our kids to take a test? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. And Jacob is on the line. Jacob, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. It seems like most of the comments were kind of against it, and I'm full supporting it. I think it's a great way for our kids to learn how to prepare for life. I'm in the healthcare industry, and there are many times that the state comes in to either recredential us or to visit us for any reason, and a lot of our future depends on those few days to visit. So I think it's a great way to have those kids, you know, learn that, you know, sometimes there are stressful times in life that, you know, we got to step up to the plate and perform.
All right, Jacob, thank you for your call. I appreciate you bringing that perspective. So we'll hear from everyone on that. But let's go to Heather Sheffield first with the Texas Advocating for Meaningful School Assessment.
Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest problems with the STAR test, and I agree that we do need to have meaningful assessments, and TAMSA is all about meaningful assessments. But one of the biggest problems with the STAR is that it lacks instructional sensitivity, which measured what the child actually learned in the classroom and not what they're bringing in with them to the classroom. So what I'm talking about is, A, if a child is having a bad day, or they have had a tricky home life, or they haven't had experiences that maybe some other kids would have, that's going to not be accounted for in the STAR test. We're also spending a lot of money on a test that really isn't measuring. And before we were talking about the curriculum being measured, it really isn't, because when you read a reading passage that's in there, it is actually above the grade level. For instance, on the third grade reading STAR test, there's information in that that is at a fifth or a sixth grade reading level. So I'm not quite sure that that's accurately assessing a third grader. So I have many concerns. The other concern is that it's not accurately finding out what our special needs population knows. And in fact, there was a glitch in the system several days ago, and many of those kids who were taking the test online were not able to actually perform the way that they should have been able to, because their test was interrupted sometimes up to 15 times in the testing period. I don't know that that's a way that we can accurately gauge if someone knows the content and
right.
have that.
But to Jacob's point, which is like he's in a high performance area, he's in the medical field, and he has to be
sure.
tested in order to be recertified. But that's a place where people have self-selected to be at a profession where you know people have been trained, and you know, this, not every person in our society has got to be tested for that particular skill set. And we're talking about all children in our public school system. So I mean, he's right, and we do need to have that testing and certification and recertification for his area. But to apply those same standards to all public school children is kind of the question, and whether or not we should be preparing all public school children for his job choice. So let me go to Molly Wiener with the Texas Aspires to kind of talk about, you know, his point. You know, I can see his point, and can you sort of add to that?
Yeah, I think that Jacob does bring up a point, and when he talks about kind of how there are a lot of real world scenarios when our students are going to be in situations that matter, whether they're taking the SAT to get into college, or the TSR, the several of the kind of college entrance exams, or whether you're taking the LSAT or the MCAT, these situations where your performance matters and it's indicative of all of the learning that you've done. And so what I think is important is that we focus on that these tests are important because the results matter, not because, you know, passing the third grade STAR test means you're going to get into college, but because it's about, you know, can you read or not? And that's a really important skill that matters long term in your life outcomes, in your career and life trajectories. And so I think we have to set kind of our high expectations for every single student. Say, we know that you are capable of performing at grade level every single year, and we're going to do everything we can to help you get there. And these tests are just an indication of our progress on that way.
Sharon Nichols with the UTSA, your professor of emotional psychology at the educational psychology at the College of Education and Human Development.
Yeah, I want to speak to this issue of having to perform to get through a hoop. Accountability is something that most educators want. We want to know and be measured and evaluated as to whether we're being quote-unquote effective. The question here is, what does it mean to be effective? What is effective teaching and what is effective learning? And the problem is what our society and what Texas is saying is tests are the only measure of effectiveness for an education system. And to me, that raises questions regarding what is it we want our education system to do for students? And by making everything about a test, we're saying that's the only important goal that we should have students pursuing. Now, I'm not suggesting academics and learning isn't important, but the minute you laser focus in on the test as the sole measure of one aspect of education, you're completely neglecting all the other goals we might have for education, such as a love for learning, a motivation that is about being able to be resistant to and resilient to barriers. And what we know motivationally is a system that puts all the pressure on one set of tests. The minute you put stakes to these tests, you undermine motivation. And that's replayed in all disciplines in business and economics. You would think putting a reward, putting a consequence on an outcome would immediately and linearly translate into more effort, but we know that doesn't happen because students think, they feel, they have complicated social, emotional, familial lives, and we're not attending to any of those things when we put everything on the test.
Let's go back to the phones with Irene. And Irene, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much. My family and I moved, we're military, and my husband and I, so we moved here to Texas last year. So this is the first STAR test that my two sons, third grade and fifth grade, have taken. And we wanted to prepare them. So we, my husband and I, got online and we printed out a couple of years worth of old STAR tests to prepare them. So for weeks, the boys have been preparing, but at the same time, my husband and I sat down and took the test as well to see what the topics were like for math and science and reading. And my husband and I both came out realizing is that they're very logic-based tests. So for the science, at one point on an old test, my husband and my son couldn't figure out the answer. And they showed it to me. I'm an environmental attorney. So I looked at it and I said, this has nothing to do with science. This is logic. This is an LSAT question. Most of the questions are logic. They have very little to do with an actual subject. It's learning how to take a test. So we inform our children that it's not the end-all and be-all, these tests, but these tests are recorded. And in life, we jump through hoops. Everyone is required to jump through hoops. You will be tested. If you want to be in the military, you're going to be, you know, when you enlist, you're going to take a test. Or if you're an officer, you have finished college and you come in. It's unrealistic in our society today to not look at the importance of test taking.
All right, Irene, thank you for that call. Very good in points there. But no one's ever saying there should be no tests. Tests are a part of schooling. I think it's what we're kind of talking about. And it's great that you are able to do that with your kids and put in that time and effort and have that ability to do that. And not all kids have parents that have that capacity or that time or that patience. And so those kids are so lucky to have you able to do that. So I would love to hear from Molly Weiner about that with the Texas Aspires.
Yeah, I think that that story is a great story. And I think that you bring up a great point as well about how, you know, not every parent is able to spend that time with their kids. They may not have access to the resources. And Texas is doing a lot of work around kind of this transparency, right? We're not taking these tests just to have a score or a number on a kid. We're taking them to learn what they do and don't know at the end of a year. And then we're providing a lot of resources for teachers, for parents to engage on those things. So parents are knowing exactly which questions their child didn't miss. They get to look at them just like the last caller talked about. You get to look at all the questions that your kid took on the STAR test and you get to decide, do I think that these are important things for my student to know? And some of the subjects may have some more logic-based questions, which you could argue like a lot of thinking that you will do out in your kind of jobs and in your life requires kind of that logical, critical thinking. And then a lot of them have some of those basic skills. So like I taught algebra and a lot of them are just, you know, can you find the slope of a line, right? These are skills that we would think would be important. And when parents kind of see that and are able to look at those questions and see exactly what their kids are being asked, and see ways they can support their children, we think that that is a good thing.
And Heather Sheffield at Texans Advocating for Meaningful School Assessment. As no one's really talking about doing away with tests. I think, is it about how the tests are administered and how much weight they're given? Is that the question?
Yes, that is absolutely the question. We are not against testing. We are just against the high-stakes nature and tests that rank and sort children and not measure what they actually know. If we were truly checking for the mastery of the content, then everyone would be able to get a chance to get an A or a 100 and to pass this test. But unfortunately, that's not the case with these tests because the high stakes are there. We definitely advocate for other tests that do a great job and that actually do measure what the children learned and what where their strengths and their weaknesses are. The problem also is that we're giving these tests and we're passing or we're failing these schools, but then we're not going back and saying, okay, this child missed this, so what do we need to do? Or this child is not reading well. Why is that? Are they dyslexic? You know, do they need other services? Why is that? How can we help them? Because the grades are given in the summer, we're just or at the end of the year, we're really not doing that much with them, unfortunately. And again, because the curriculum and the tests really aren't aligned very well, and there is information in the test that really isn't grade appropriate or age appropriate, we need to work on that to make it a better test. I do have to applaud TEA, though. Their parent portal is much better this year than it has been. We are extremely happy to see the Lexile scores on the parent portal. But at the same time, there is still a lot of work to do, and we really just want the high stakes removed.
Right, and still back to the point that there are parents who are involved, who have a college education, they have the capacity and the patience in order to sit down with their kids and help them do those, work through the parent portal questions and pass tests. And then there are kids who have parents that work several jobs and who are stressed out, and maybe they didn't get higher education. And this is all, they're not, they don't have that ability or that access to do that. And so it just shows you that there is generational differences across Texas and being able to help your kids with these tests. We're going to take another break. Phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. We're going to hear more about the different gaps here in Bexar County with these tests. 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about standardized testing in our public schools today because this week, kids all across Texas are taking the STAR test, and this is a test that could decide the teacher's future, the school's future, their future, a lot of stuff riding on this test. Now we turn to Emily Royal. She's a reporter at the Rivard Report, a data analyst reporter, and she's looked at what's going on here in Bexar County. And Emily, welcome back to The Source.
Hi, thanks for having myself and the Rivard Report on the show.
And so tell me about what you found looking at the data.
Yeah, so myself and my colleague, our educational reporter, Emily Donaldson, looked at the performance of at-risk kids on the fifth grade STAR math and reading exams. At-risk is defined as children that are behind a grade level already, children with a limited English proficiency, have been already expelled or on probation or in foster care or are homeless, basically kids with sort of extenuating life circumstances that makes it difficult for them to perform in standardized testing environments. And our interesting finding was that although Bexar County shows gains across the board on STAR results for districts in Bexar County, the gap in performance between at-risk kids and their peers remains pretty wide, as much as 48% for Southside ISD on the STAR math exam. Additionally, we found that on average, 32% fewer at-risk fifth graders in Bexar County school districts passed the math portion of the exam than their peers, and 22% fewer at-risk fifth graders pass the reading portion of the exam.
looking at the percentage of children who are at risk per population of a local school district, are there school districts that have high percentages of children who are considered to be at risk?
Yes, definitely. 75% of students in San Antonio ISD are considered at risk, whereas for some districts that have greater property wealth per student, like Alamo Heights ISD, for example, there's only 27% of students in Alamo Heights that are at risk. But an interesting thing that we found is that even though, Alamo Heights and some of these wealthier school districts show smaller gaps in performance between their at-risk kids and their not at-risk kids on the STAR exam, that performance gap is actually only about 4% smaller than the district-wide average for the reading exam in one case, and 9% smaller than the district-wide average for the math exam. So that is to say that, you know, although those gaps are smaller, they're not smaller by that much for wealthier districts.
Do school districts or campuses that have a high percentage of at-risk students, do they receive additional resources from the state?
Yes, some of them do. I think that's kind of a district-by-district case. But certainly better performance on the STAR in turn means more resources being given to those school districts. So that's part of the pressure that I think these districts are feeling. In speaking with
let me pause right there and try to review what you just told me, see if I got it right. So if they do better on the STAR, then they get more resources, right?
Yes.
But if they do less on, don't do as well on this high test, on this important test, then they get fewer resources.
In some cases.
But isn't that kind of counterintuitive? If they don't do that well on the test, don't they need more resources to help the children?
Yep, that's exactly right.
Okay, all right, continue. As we were talking about, how these kids who are at risk need more help.
Right. So we did speak with teachers, who are working in some of these districts like San Antonio ISD that have such a huge population of at-risk kids. And they really say that by the time the STAR results come out, it's too late. They already have intervention plans in place for specific students that they've identified way before they take the STAR exam as being children that are at risk to not perform well or not make it to the next grade level. So a number of teachers told us that, for them, the STAR exam is sort of secondary to intervening with the students, hopefully before they even get to the standardized testing room.
So you have a lot of people, the teachers know who's at risk. They know what kids need extra help, right? They're dealing with this test. And are they able to really kind of focus in and help these kids?
I think in many cases, yes, but, I ask teachers about where is the boundary line for intervention. A lot of this stuff, is happening to kids at home, and there is definitely sort of a border that the school can't really cross in terms of, intervening in students' lives. However, they do try as much as possible to build relationships with parents, and that is critical, I think, for student performance on these exams, is making sure that the caretakers in their life are involved and are part of the process.
Okay, so I'm just going to go one thing. You told us what at risk is, and let me make sure I got this right. It's a student that is at least one grade level in school behind, limited English, has been expelled, on parole or probation, maybe they're in a CPS, maybe they're homeless, they lived in a detention facility, emergency shelter, have all these different really harsh, stressful conditions on them. And you say 75% of the kids in SAISD are labeled at-risk students. That's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. it really is. And I was shocked when I saw that statistic.
All right. I want to thank you, Emily Royal, with the Rivard Report. We are going to have a link to this important story on our website at tpr.org in the source category. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for teasing out this information for us.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
So let me go back to the phone lines. We got a lot of callers here who want to talk about this stuff. And this is Michael. And Michael, welcome to the source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me. I I found over time that it's easier to identify a problem and more difficult to actually create a solution to that problem. So this is kind of directed directly to Heather, but obviously the other folks will probably like to weigh in. But how do you fix this problem, both like incrementally, what kind of changes could be made to this system as it stands that would actually affect the testing and make it more effective? And then what kind of radical solution could be implemented that would make this more effective?
All right, Michael, thank you for the call. And Heather, that's to you, and you're with Texans Advocating for Meaningful School Assessment.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Michael. So first of all, I just want to agree that 75% of at-risk kids is heartbreaking, and there is stuff that we can do. The first thing that we can do is eliminate the high stakes, especially for kids that have the majority of their population at risk. We're spending about, our contract with ETS is $327 million. That just increased in January. We could use that $327 million so many other ways to make sure that our kids aren't falling through the cracks, to get interventions in place. One in five children is estimated to be dyslexic. That includes children that are at risk and in schools that are being closed down and aren't getting the funds that they need. Money matters. If we can spend that money better and to get the teachers the training that they need and they can get the interventions in place that they need for these kiddos, sure, we can't help their home life all the time, but there's a lot more that we could be doing in the school in terms of programming and intervention and hiring more teachers and more counselors. We can absolutely do so much for them.
Now, let's go over to Molly Weiner with the Texas Aspires. Talk about what you think the state of the testing is now and if there are changes that need to be put into place.
Yeah, I think that it's a great question and that we should be continually revisiting how our assessments work to make sure that they are doing what we intend them to do. And I think a lot of that work happens around, we know that we have a test that measures kind of basic standards for every grade level. And I think what we need to focus on and where a lot of the solutions and work can come in in terms of making sure that people, one, understand what the test is, but two, use the data for actionable things, right? So, like I've said before, we don't want to just take the test and then go home for the summer and forget that it even happened, right? We want to make it easy for teachers to look at that data and say, hey, none of my, or very few of my kids got this question right. What can I do better next year, right? Like, where can we improve our teaching practice? Where can we fill in gaps and get to intervention sooner for kids? Like, we talk about making this data actionable, talk about making it usable at the teacher level, at the parent level, at the student level, empowering them to kind of understand where their strengths are and their gaps in knowledge, I think is kind of that next big step of terms of, like, it's not accountability for the sake of accountability. It's accountability for the sake of student progress. And focusing on that, I think, is really a critical next piece for the state.
And Sharon Nichols?
Well, I just want to comment on the caller's thinking that, you know, we all know what the problem is, so let's figure out a different solution potentially. I would argue that's core to how we address what's going on in public education, that we're more critical of defining the problem. And as we heard even from the report, the Rivard report, different districts and different schools are grappling with different problems. So is the problem low student motivation? Is the problem bad teaching? In some cases, the problem is we don't have enough experienced teachers. We know overwhelmingly that disproportionate number of novice teachers end up teaching in the neediest contexts, and it takes at least 5 years if they don't burn out, which a significant number of teachers are burning out, and very quickly. Thereby, students in those most needy areas also have to endure constant teacher turnover or a high rate of teacher turnover. So to me, it's very critical that we examine what are the very problems that we're trying to fix and not slap a one-size-fits-all solution, which is what this testing system is aiming to do. By giving everyone a test, we're saying the problem is all students need to get to this, you know, 10 inches on a foot yardstick. And to say everyone has to get to the same place is, I think, narrowly defining the problems we're facing in public education, which are complex and difficult.
All right. One more break. We got a bunch of callers. We'll get you on the air when we come back from this break. And the number is 210-614-8980. Standardized testing in Texas public schools. Are we on the right track? What do you think needs to change? Or do you think we're doing just a good job? Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a hot topic, standardized testing in Texas schools. And this week, we got a lot of kids, all public school children, unless they have opted out, are taking the STAR test. And let's get back to the phones. This is Lillian's. And Lillian, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much. Okay, so I've heard a lot of point of views from teachers and parents and basically just like the adults. Well, I'm a student. I just graduated high school and I took many, many STAR tests. And the focus every year was always, okay, so you need to pass this test. This is what I'm going to teach you. And I'm only going to teach you what you need to pass this test. And that's how it was every year. So in the end, as we started getting older, many kids started hating reading or they started hating math. Like, no, I don't like this because it's just to pass the test. And it shouldn't be like that. Like, I understand that there needs to be, like, a measurement to keep track of how we're doing, where we need more help, but it shouldn't be so high stakes because me, when I was younger, I was really good at math, but as I grew up, I started hating math because it started getting harder for me and all the focus was on passing the test. And it's just, like, there needs to be a better balance between teaching a love of learning and a love of all these different subjects and teaching us to be good test takers.
All right. But Lillian, I got a question for you. So don't go away just yet. My question, Lillian, is what did you learn about how to tackle a problem? By this is how the school systems, they had a problem of the test, and they were going to only teach to the test. And so not only did they try to, but you learned their problematic approach. And so was that helpful to you, or did that teach you that things in life are kind of radically rigid?
Well, really, as comparing now that it's my first year in college, comparing it to how it was in high school, it's so completely different. It's just, they make it seem very rigid. And in college, it's like, okay, you just got to get your work done. It's not that you have to pass. You absolutely, your end all is the end of the year test. So to say, it's like you have to get your work done in order to be able to take a comprehensive test. But
okay.
I was taught that it was very rigid.
All right. Thank you, Lillian. So let me go over to Sharon Nichols, professor of education psychology at at the College of Education and Human Development at University of Texas, San Antonio. Sharon?
Yeah. I mean, what she's speaking to is what we know very well in the world of motivation. If you think about young kids going to school, kindergartners, first graders, they're usually pretty excited. They're excited to show you what they can do. Some are natural born readers and real excited about reading or doing worksheets. But as we put them in our school system and we slap on grades, 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 and now even at earlier ages, the test, the test, the test, what we see is a decrease in interest in schooling, just exactly what the caller was explaining. You become jaded, you become less interested in the topic, and therefore your motivation plummets. So the more we make learning about extrinsic or external reasons, do it for the test. The only reason to do this is for the test. The harder it is to support aspects of motivation where I'm trying to do things because it makes me feel good, because it's something I'm striving for, because it helps me feel competent. It helps me feel like I know what I'm doing. So motivation theory completely would disagree with the use of tests and holding or attaching stakes to tests as a way to get them to pass through some hoops, because all it does is it diminishes interest, value, caring for learning. And it asks students to just abide by some kind of, and I'll use the caller's word, rigid system. And someone else has defined that system for you. The student didn't get a chance to define it. So
and so, but there are nations in the world that have different education approaches. Mm-hmm. Some are really good at delivering education. And so like Finland, you know, is held up. What kind of standardized testing approach do they have?
So Finland doesn't do standardized testing. Finland embraces creativity, relationships between teachers and students. Of course, it's a completely different culture. They also value teachers there. You have to get a higher degree. It's harder to become a teacher, kind of like the medical system is here, has more prestige. So there's a whole host of things going on in a country such as that. But there's a significant de-emphasis on testing as a way to learn. It's more focused on inquiry. It's more focused on student-directed learning. It's more focused on the relationships that get built among students and between teachers and students.
All right, let's go over to another caller. This is Michelle. And Michelle, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you. I am was a teacher, and I'm a parent now of a student that really struggles with the STAR test. And I think my biggest issue is it's like everyone is saying, the high-stakes nature of the test. And you know, my daughter has an anxiety disorder and is completely paralyzed with fear about these tests because she's so worried she's going to be retained. So her experience with the test is not showing what she knows. It's showing how much she can stand as far as the anxiety and the pressure that's on these kids to pass one test as a snapshot on one day. And I don't think it is a clear picture of teaching and learning and what she knows. And I wish that it wasn't so demanding on the kids because it's too much pressure.
I'm going to go to another caller, and this is Kari. And Kari, welcome to The Source. You're on the air, Kari.
Yes, hello. I also have to agree with caller Lillian because I am also a student who took a lot of tests. But I'm also a daughter of a teacher who loved teaching. That is her passion. And as well as us students, we burn out because we're just taught to basically pass a test. Then she's basically getting paid to administer tests instead of teaching. And then she's noticed that low students, high at risk students, get really not motivated to take these tests because they're like they said, you know, these kindergartners, these first graders are so excited to learn, but then you start putting labels. You start saying, if you don't do this, you're going to, it's like a threat. It's not motivation. It's more like a threat. If you don't do this, then you're not going to get to this point.
All right. Kari, thank you so much. Let's go to Molly Wiener, Director of Policy at the nonprofit Texas Aspires. So we're hearing all sorts of things throughout this hour-long conversation about why this test exists. But it was designed with a specific purpose, and that's to measure teacher performance, right? But we've heard that it's good for toughening up kids and getting them ready for the world and become professionals, and life is tough, so they need to take tough tests. I mean, why do we have this test to begin with? Have we had mission creep in regards to why we have the test?
I think that I would kind of argue a little bit that the test is mostly designed as a measure of teacher performance. I think the test is kind of a design of or a measure of student learning. And I think one of the main reasons Texas has started this, right, going back to 1980 when we were one of the first states to start looking at what are ways we can measure the progress of our students, is because we realized that people's classroom experience varied widely from school to school and even classroom to classroom, and that we had no idea like how students were performing. And once we started measuring, we saw the big gaps that we heard kind of the reporter from the Rivard Report talk about, right? We saw these kind of big differences between students of high income and low income, students of different socioeconomic and racial backgrounds. And we said, like, this is not acceptable in our schools. Like, if we really believe all kids can learn, then we need to really focus on that. And I think that what we've heard a lot of the talk about is schools that are doing this right, they build up a culture of learning. They have a principal and teachers that believe, like, if you teach your standards and curriculum, like, the test, the results will follow. Students will show progress. Students will be able to perform. And the pressure doesn't have to be on that one day. It's about you've been prepared all year long. And we would say that those schools that are doing it right don't adopt some of these bad practices that we know don't really work, like teaching to the test, like drilling and killing and giving kids, you know, 100 multiple choice questions. That's not good pedagogy. No one would be advocating for that. And we think that the results don't show that that really works for kids or for schools.
And Heather Sheffield at Texans advocating for meaningful student assessment.
Yes. So there are no requirements for high stakes at the federal level. Texans advocating for meaningful student assessment, we really are just advocating for the removal of the high stakes and to reduce the amount of tests to no more than what is federally required. So that way we can really focus on the kids. Our main goal is to focus on the students and how these tests are affecting their education. We want to make sure that we are using assessments that are really, you know, checking for mastery and finding out if there are weaknesses, and also shining light on the children's strengths. We want to make sure that the children are the focus of these tests, and we aren't using them to blame and to deceive, and using them for the right reasons to help kids.
Okay, and last word, Sharon Nichols, you have about a minute.
Yeah, I think, again, we have to consider what the test is being used for. The fact that the test exists is okay. Tests are fundamentally okay. The minute you make it used for accountability, the minute you attach stakes to it, you've altered the terrain of knowledge you're measuring, because now you've put everyone under a heightened sense of pressure and worry and concern. And it's going to vary based on the types of pressures you have. If you're a high income or a low income setting, and the types of challenges you might be encountering is going to partially dictate how you respond to that pressure. But the minute that pressure is incurred, you immediately render the meaningfulness of the test score invalid. We don't know what it represents, because now you're changing the conditions under which students are learning, teachers are teaching, and now we don't even know what the test measures. So take away the stakes, have the test measure something meaningful, and use it to actually improve teaching and learning.
All right. Sharon Nichols is a professor of educational psychology at the College of Education and Human Development at the University of Texas, San Antonio. We're also joined by Heather Sheffield, a board member for the grassroots organization Texans Advocating for Meaningful Student Assessment. And also Molly Weiner was with us. She's the director of policy at the nonprofit Texas Aspires. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.